So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Lots happening in the world right now. News broke today that Princess Kate is recovering from not just the stomach surgery we knew about earlier this year, but that she has stomach cancer and she's undergoing chemotherapy. I'll share with you a little bit of my thoughts on the topic, and whether you're royalty obsessed or not, I think there's a lot behind the story from the media coverage and the obsession over where Princess Kate has been for the last handful of months, even people going so far as to claim that she's not alive, others to say that there's been an affair, and then to come out and find almost by a force of hand that they're having to share about her very private medical journey right now after the news broke earlier in the week that medical records might have been obtained of Princess Kate's after people have been trying even to break through and break in to obtain those records from one of the clinics she had been at earlier this year. So thoughts on that in just a little bit. If you'd like to join the conversation today, the number is 888-914-9149. That's our toll-free line, and it's sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters Life Insurance. Also today, have you heard about the news and the recent spike of emergency room visits? Well, it actually has to do with the increase, or not the increase, but the latest news of the Supreme Court hearing in the coming days this month, a case about abortion. So stay with me, more on that and the inadequate medical care that women are receiving and the news we need to be able to share with other people as this high-profile abortion case is in the public's eye. It's an opportunity to shape the conversation surrounding abortion. When you know people who disagree or maybe discussing it, you might have a couple talking points in your back pocket to take out and engage the conversation, ask questions. Also, how do you celebrate Holy Week? I have news. This is our last live show before Holy Week kicks off. I won't be back with you again until Easter because there will be a special retreat here on Relevant Radio given by Father Rocky during this normal time slot of 6 p.m. Central. So be sure to listen to Father Rocky's mission that he'll be giving all week and prepare the way for Holy Week and Easter. But I won't leave without some ideas for what you can do to celebrate Easter. Now, there's also a question that came in to what to do if your spouse wants an open marriage. A woman wrote to me this past week with this exact question, and my heart's there with her because this is a trend that continues, and maybe you or someone you know is having to navigate this. My prayers and some ideas on how to navigate the idea of an open marriage, and of course, it obviously goes against the vows of what the church teaches, but that still requires a lot of nitty-gritty guidance in how to navigate what to do, how to handle those conversations, how to pray for this particular circumstance. So buckle up, a lot to be discussed today on Trending. You're listening to Relevant Radio. It's great to be with you. Before we dive into some of our other topics, a recent study came out from UCLA called Teens and Screens, and in their report, they had a lot to say about Generation Z. That's those people who were born between 1997 and 2012. That would make them, as of this year, anywhere between the age of 12 and 27 years old. They're in the workforce, they're in high school, they are in college, they are in middle school, and they're out in the populace, getting married, not getting married, more likely today. And what came out in the research is that Gen Z is missing out on a crucial part of their lives, and that is that they feel alone. In fact, 3 out of 4 Gen Zers say that they feel very alone. And not just that, they've actually commented that they wish to see examples of authentic friendship and loving relationships depicted in the media, whether it be movies, television, things they like to see from influencers as well. In fact, they want to see less sex on the screen and more friendship. It was interesting to me because friendship's always been a big topic of study for me. In fact, I spent a lot of time writing on this in school and after school about the importance of friendship. And friendships develop with family members, friends, with your spouse. Friendships also come and go. I keep thinking of the words of Saint Jerome, who says, "The friendship that can cease has never been real." It's a pretty profound statement when you think about how often individuals will come and go over the span of a lifetime. Whether it's coworkers who come and go, childhood friends who skip along, or family who will always be there, love it or hate it. I think maintaining relationships is one of the most difficult things to both do and understand, because we're trying to understand another complex human being with faults similar or different to ourselves. And again, that includes family and friends, people in our community. And sometimes we just grow apart, move far away, get busy, have kids in a different season of life than each other. It happens. But what's difficult is that it's not easy to maintain a friendship to begin with. If we throw out all those factors of distance and friendships of acquaintance or convenience, depending on the places we're in, I think a lot of our relationships are more so acquaintances than what I'd actually label or should label an actual friendship. I remember some years ago when I was in college going to a presentation given by a nun on friendships. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. And it said the philosophy of friendship. And she dove into the great work of Aristotle, known as the Nicomachean Ethics. The whole book centers around a few ideas, but ultimately around virtue and friendship. If you, at the end of the day, if you ever have the opportunity to read the book, it's actually a pretty easy read, very practical, and very fruitful. It's probably one of my most cited and favorite books to pick back up, and it's a classic. Now, in the Nicomachean Ethics, Aristotle lays out three different types of friendship. And I remember when I heard this presentation by the nun, I heard her talking about these three types of friendship. And I thought, that's what I want. That's what I want. Because friendship had been so difficult leading up to and throughout college. And even today, as an adult, I find more recently I'm starting to get my bearings when it comes to friendships, as I grow as a person, as I adjust my expectations and I adjust the way I engage in relationships with people. And I'm talking about friendships, including family and friends, because those relationships that we have with our family aren't ones we can just be lazy about as well. Those ones take work, fostering and kindling them to be good and wholesome relationships. Now, some of the things that Aristotle says, in paraphrasing some of his work, is that true friendship is a friendship for the sake of the other. And in fact, it's quite fascinating to me because he comments, and this is much of the same as others have commented with regard to the philosophy of friendship, that you can really only actually have a few close friends. Why? Because friendship takes work and it takes time. Now, if you just look at it predominantly, the relationship for many people that you'll spend a good majority of your lifetime in life with are those people who you marry. So it's a reminder of the importance to cultivate friendship before marriage and to cultivate that friendship during marriage as well. So I always love the idea of being friends before dating. It is helpful, and I encourage considering to try it. Now, if we really understood how important friendship was, I think that we wouldn't have the basically 50% divorce rate that we do today. If we understood as men and women the importance of friendship, if we understood how to work on our friendships, I don't think that we would be so self-centered in our relationships that we'd have a more guiding structure for what to do in these relationships. And there's a legitimacy to needing to focus on friendships, whether it be family, friends, coworkers, because we're social human beings. God created us with a body and a soul. He made us for communion. He imaged us. He created us after himself. And God is a communion of persons, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. And they have a relation to one another, just as we're called to have relationships to other human beings we know. This is why it wasn't good that Adam was alone. And God himself said, it is not good that man should be alone. And he created Eve as a helpmate, a complement to Adam. Humans are created for relationship, both in the imitation, the image of God, and being like God, but also in the way God intended us, saying it's not good for us to be an island and alone. This is part of what differs in us from animals. Aristotle says that friendship is the greatest of external goods for human beings. Why is that? Well, look at the difference in the types of souls, for example. So you have a plant, you have an animal, and you have a human being. Plants have nutritive souls. They grow and they reproduce. They're not capable of relationships and friendships. I love my plants. They bring me immense happiness. My decorating theme in my house are plants. But they're there beautifully to look at. They help to purify the air even. But I can't enter into a relationship with a plant. Similarly, and I know I'll get knocked for this one, but the truth is, animals are not human beings. Animals have sensitive souls. They move and they have sensations, which is why they're more interactive. But they can't enter into the relationships that human beings have. Human beings have intellectual souls. This is what sets us apart. This means that us as human beings have the ability to think and reason, to love. Because we can know something, that is think, and chase after it, pursue and love it, that means we can love. Intellect and free will are the things that give us the ability to love. And that's the very challenge, is that free will is, I guess you could say arguably, what gets in the way of us having good relationships because we don't exercise our free will in the right way. Aristotle in the Nicomachean Ethics says that a human person can better perceive others. In other words, animals and plants can't do this. A human being can't. We can get to know someone. We can ponder and read the room, read someone's expression and emotion. Even earlier, I was reading or watching the video from Princess Kate sharing about her stomach disease, which we'll talk about in just a little bit. And it's one thing to hear it. My mom said, make sure you watch it. And you see her, she's on the verge of tears. She's barely holding it together as she's sharing her testimony. And so eloquently does she make it through the entirety of the news of her and her family. We receive and can get to know and better perceive other human beings because we are able to have this ability to reason and pursue. And so this brings me to the three different types of friendship. Aristotle lays out friendship in three different ways: the friendships of utility, friendships of pleasure, and friendships of virtue. Now, obviously, the friendships we want, need, and should have are those friendships of virtue. Now, let's break these down according to what each one is, because I think this is where it starts to get a little enlightening. And I will start preface this with understanding we do have friendships of convenience. People will know for a season of time, but we're called to make sure that we are not reducing them to their usefulness and pleasure. And so let me lay this out. So the friendship of utility is pretty self-explanatory, yet I think it needs explanation. And I need that reminder. A friendship of utility is that friendship where the friendship's basis, the relationship's basis, is only how you are useful to me. And we're only in this relationship as long as you are useful to me. And when you're no longer useful to me, well, the relationship could go out the door. So I could give the example, you're in high school and you're carpooling with some other kids from the neighborhood to get to school. Well, suddenly you move to the other side of the town and you're no longer carpooling. You had a bit of a friendship until then. Maybe you hung out. I don't know. But you'd interact and engage with each other. Well, you get to school now and this person who was helping you in a carpool, you couldn't even say hello to in the hallway. Completely ignore and blow them off. You are blowing them off because they're no longer useful to you. And all of us have relationships that we wrongly make this mistake of doing that. It shows the importance of giving value and love and respect to people, even when they're not useful to us. Now, this could be the opposite. Another person could be in the relationship just for how useful you are to them. And when you're no longer useful, let's say you no longer have the nice car to give a ride in. Maybe you no longer have the same level of financial means where you used to be really generous and having parties and inviting people over, and now you're not doing that so often. And so you're not as useful to the other individual and also pleasurable. This is where it starts to cross over into that second type of friendship, the friendship of pleasure. Remember when I was a kid, my mom would also often talk about fair weather friends and even sometimes how family members could engage in this way. We have a big extended family, cousins and tons, and sometimes it was hard to understand why so-and-so was spending time with so-and-so and not the other way around, or why you would just kind of be forgotten. And I think it's because we have to remember sometimes as human beings, we just chase what is novel and fun. And this is a friendship of pleasure, where the basis of the friendship is pleasure. And when that pleasure is gone, maybe we don't spend time anymore around that individual. I think a season in life, and this is why I love when I work with high school and college age people, I love to dive into these three types of friendship, because utility and pleasure friendships are running rampant. And if only we could know and understand what these were, to be more aware in the relationships you engage in during that season of high school and college. Because I think a friendship of pleasure, well, we see friendship of utility in the hookup culture, very obviously. But we also see a friendship of pleasure in that as well. But also, I see a friendship of pleasure, especially among girls today, where girls are one day, I remember there was a term about 10 to 15 years ago. I don't think they use it anymore. I remember I used it about 8 years ago, and my sister would make fun of me. She said, "That's so not a term anymore." But people would say, "You're my bae." And bae meant before all else. And so you'd see all these posts on social media, before all else. And so you'd see these girls posting online, these high school girls, "I'm with my bae," again, meaning before all else. And then 2 weeks later, they hated their guts, deleted them for social media, erased all of the photos, and they were no longer talking about that other individual. Why? Because the girl became no longer pleasurable. And so you were yesterday's news. You were the cast off. And so with the friendship of pleasure, what can happen a lot, and this is especially, I think, with girls, very prevalent. Let's say a girl breaks up with her boyfriend, and now she's a mopey girl. She's not getting over herself. She's moping around all the time. And you just get sick of being around mopey girls. So you stop being friends with her. Don't have any compassion. Quit spending time with her. This shows how often it is, and again, I've been guilty of this as well, where someone is no longer pleasurable to be around, so you quit spending time with them. You avoid them. Now, here's what's fascinating to me. Aristotle, in his Nicomachean Ethics, on this whole section on friendship, comments and says, one of my producers said she used to use the word bae. Anyway, in the Nicomachean Ethics, he comments on how in friendship, you're not even supposed to complain to or about the other individual. And that any criticism or complaint should be a constructive criticism that is something to help with the detriment of that individual. And it could be that they're doing something that's harmful to you, but it's also harmful to them because they're doing it. And so you use that as a concern to help them, not to just critique because you don't like certain behaviors they're engaging in. I am like person number one that's bad about not like complaining and criticizing. And so I think that those are really helpful guidelines sometimes to recognize in these friendship of utility and those friendships of pleasure, how lowly the basis of our friendships can be. And that even if there are relationships of convenience that come and go, that we make sure we don't degrade that person to their usefulness or to how pleasing they are. But also be aware not to allow yourself to remain in a friendship or a relationship that degrades you perpetually to your usefulness and to your ability to please others. It's a good way to help protect yourself from harmful friendships that are just one-sided. And sure, you can be acquaintances and kind to people and help them, but protect yourself from the damage that could be done of thinking that something's a friendship and expecting that reciprocity and it not being there. This brings us to the third type of friendship that I'd like to touch on. That is the friendship of virtue. It's a friendship for the sake of the other person. So much so, as I mentioned earlier, you don't even complain about or to the other person. That you often, Aristotle, and even if you look into some of the great works of St. John of the Cross, speak of how there needs to be some commonality, that common theme or something that's bringing the two together in the friendship. And I get this because I remember when I was doing a lot of activism and pro-life work when I was younger and how it was through those friendships of people that I was on a mission with. We had a common view and a common goal. That was when I started to develop really strong, authentic friendships to today. It was when I dove into my faith very deeply and started to encounter people who had deep, deep faith, that had that as a catalyst for what motivated them in life, and growth together could be an opportunity. These are things that help forge a friendship when we have these common views, when we have these common goals that can help be that glue that binds two together. You can see that in marriage as well. The importance of having family and having those goals and working toward if you have children and caring for them. But here's a reminder, and this is what's challenging. If you're in want of friendships, as I know the millennial generation and especially Gen Z are, with high levels of loneliness, not knowing how to be friends, we have to be willing to put in the work. A report published in the Journal of Social and Personal Relationships shows data regarding numbers of how much time it takes to move someone from being an acquaintance to being a casual friend. You have to spend 50 hours of quality time with someone to move them from acquaintance into casual friendship. You have to spend about 80 to 100 hours to transition someone into being a friend. And if you're looking for someone to become a really good friend, it takes over 200 hours of quality time together. This is startling when you look at the numbers and adding them up. It takes a lot of work to build those relationships. So again, it comes back to ideas such as Aristotle and many others who have spoken of the philosophy of friendship. Choose your friendships. Choose them wisely. Put in the time and don't try to overburden and overcommit yourself with those people. Make sure that you're building up authentic relationships and holding yourself accountable. So the friendship can, yes, be for the sake of yourself and growing you, but as Aristotle says, that friendship of virtue is even more so for the sake of the other. And those friendships edify us as well. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Coming up next, what do you do if your spouse wants an open marriage? And also the news from Princess Kate regarding her stomach cancer. We'll share a little bit about that and a little bit of the public frenzy over it. I'll be right back. Are you tired of educational options that are one size fits all? Our sponsor, Colby Academy, offers the flexibility of both accredited online and traditional school at home options to fit the needs of your child. Visit relevantradio.com/Colby.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
A woman wrote into me a couple days ago, and we'll take it up in a couple minutes. Tough question. What do you do if your spouse wants an open marriage? Maybe you've been there. Maybe you know someone who has. We'll dive into that in just a moment. Princess Kate, the Princess of Wales, published a message today from Kensington Palace. It's a recorded message, her by herself. And she shared the news that she has stomach cancer. And whether you're royalty obsessed or not, I think we could all agree we're praying for her. This is a woman with three young children, George, Charlotte, and Louis. And my heart's broken for this woman. Now, there's a lot more to the story, whether you've been following the media frenzy since the beginning of the year. We had received news in the media at the beginning of the year that she had undergone a pretty serious stomach surgery and was recovering, and she's been out of the public's eye since the beginning of the year. Now, the royal family had come off of social media during that time, that is Princess Kate, William, and their children, and they were just asking for time as she recovered, and you know, we're spending this time recovering, and we didn't know a whole lot more than that. And some people critiqued, some people complimented that they were taking time off of social media, that we should all take a reprieve when we need it. I completely agree. But what happened was a frenzy. People have been obsessed. What's wrong with Princess Kate? The speculations have gone from as far as, is she dead and they're not telling anyone, to did William have an affair after all? Priscilla invited someone that allegedly there may have been something going on to the coronation. Who will replace Princess Kate? The speculation and obsession has been pretty intense over the last couple of months and only growing, all the way to the point where people were trying to obtain her private medical records. News came out earlier this week with people claiming they had them, a nurse claiming that she went in and tried to obtain them themselves. The authorities have been all involved, and it would seem, this is some guesswork here, that because of that, because of the possible apprehension of her medical records, that the family was pushed to make a public announcement. Now, what's devastating is that it might have been what led and forced them to have to tell their kids what was going on as well. And so here's a little bit of the message recorded by Princess Kate, the Princess of Wales, from Kensington Palace.
In January, I underwent major abdominal surgery in London, and at the time, it was thought that my condition was non-cancerous. The surgery was successful. However, tests after the operation found cancer had been present. My medical team therefore advised that I should undergo a course of preventative chemotherapy, and I'm now in the early stages of that treatment. This, of course, came as a huge shock, and William and I have been doing everything we can to process and manage this privately for the sake of our young family. As you can imagine, this has taken time. It has taken me time to recover from major surgery in order to start my treatment. But most importantly, it has taken us time to explain everything to George, Charlotte, and Louis in a way that's appropriate for them and to reassure them that I'm going to be okay. As I've said to them, I am well and getting stronger every day by focusing on the things that will help me heal in my mind, body, and spirits.
Princess Kate, the Princess of Wales, from Kensington Palace, after the media obsession over where has she been, is she dead, did he have an affair. It's so sad that when something happens and someone steps off of social media, immediate speculation. Oh, so-and-so hasn't been, and you know what I'm talking about. So-and-so hasn't posted on social media for 2 years. Did they divorce? Are they sick? Did they move? What's going on? I've heard it time and time again. And perhaps, yes, your speculation was correct. And yes, the speculation was correct. Something was going on. But where is the level of privacy? I feel bad because it makes me wonder, were Princess Kate and Prince William forced to tell their children something, George, Charlotte, and Louis, who are very young, and she even shares they had to share something with the kids in an age-appropriate way to make sure they were communicated to and to also let them know that mom was going to be okay? Were they forced to do that because we, as the public and the media, were so obsessed with what was going on that people were to the point of obtaining private medical records to let the news out? And there's legitimacy to needing to pull back from social media or from social engagements and relationships in seasons when you need privacy, when you need to cope, you need to heal, you need to treat and address things. Everyone has things that come up in life, whether it be illnesses or death and loss. And I think that we live right now at a time where we constantly have to pry. I remember in college, I was mourning the loss of one of my cousins. He had committed suicide, had spent a number of years living off and on with my family. And I did not share that news with people. I was just walking through and grieving and coping with that. And I remember a couple of people like knew I was just kind of feeling down. I thought, okay, well, we'll just kind of like nag and pester and push. And that's not something that's easy to say out loud and have a conversation about, especially when it's so raw. And I remember at one point just like flipping a switch and saying, do you know why I'm being quiet? And I briefly shared what was going on. I said, please just give me my space. And I remember the response was so startled. A couple of my friends said, oh, well, you should have just told us. We didn't know. I said, no. I said, sometimes people just need time to ride the wave of something that might be going on. Not that we should be allowed to be left alone and brooding, but that we have the ability to sometimes make a comment to someone if we see they're struggling. Hey, seems like something's going on. If you need someone to talk to, I'm here. And that maybe you might poke them and that person might say, you know what, thanks, I didn't realize I was brooding. Or, you know, yeah, I am going through something. Maybe you can pray for me. I think of something last year. I had an old college acquaintance I had run into. We were at a party together and she was visibly struggling, going through something. And she kept verbally alluding to something that was going on, but wasn't sharing more details. And I don't know her that well, but she'd repeat it over and over again. And finally I said, listen, I don't know what's going on, but it sounds like something's really, really hurting you and is a real wound right now. And I don't know if you have someone who you can talk to, but if you ever need someone to talk to, I know we're not close, but I just want you to know the door is open. And she nearly came to tears and she said, I really appreciate that. This isn't the place to do it. But if I do, I'm really grateful that I know there's someone I can reach out. And she said, things are really bad right now. If you could please, please just pray for me. And I said, you've got it. And again, haven't come back to that topic again. Didn't have to, but I think there's a level of compassion and empathy we have to be able to have for people in our immediate lives that shows we're there, but we don't have to sit here showing curiosity. And I think that's the problem. We have a real problem in our culture today with the need for curiosity. I think that curiosity really does a lot of damage today when it comes to relationships, privacy, in this case, the case of Princess Kate and her family, having to share things potentially. And I know there are some disagreements that because she's royalty and news had to be shared publicly, that she was going to have to share this. Not necessarily. They're not the king and queen. They do have time. They're young. They're navigating their family life. News doesn't necessarily have to be shared such as this. And so even giving that grace to people who are in the public eye of not public speculation, I think that's a role we can play as people of faith, that we don't always have to get so wrapped up in the gossip of what's happening. And I have a show called Trending, and there are lots of topics that are intriguing and interesting to cover. And there are some that I do take up that might have to do with speculation, but others that we really should leave to rest. And so my challenge to you is pray for the royal family. Pray for Princess Kate, her husband William, and their children as they navigate this. And God willing, she is healed. But what a journey to be on. So again, prayers for their family. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. What do you do if your spouse wants an open marriage? I received an email a couple days ago from a woman. For the sake of anonymity, I'll call her Anne. She said, what advice do you give for when a husband who is married to me and married in the Catholic Church has changed his views and has decided he wants an open marriage, even though I said I will never agree. I said that I want to make our marriage work. He does not want to pay for a marriage therapist, nor attend a retrovi, nor see a priest, because he does not believe in his words, what he says, the mind control of the church and of the government. What do I do? Should I'm also not earning money and feel scared? And I'm too embarrassed to talk to anyone because I feel I will be rejected as a bad influence in their families. Again, for the sake of anonymity, I'm calling her Anne. I hope you will pray with me. And Anne, I want you to know right now, you have an army of prayer warriors behind you. Not just thousands, but millions of people who will be praying for you and your husband. And I have a lot of faith because of that prayer and because of your beautiful fidelity to your faith and to your spouse. You're going to be okay. And when I read your email, I just kept coming back to the words of St. Paul, 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. He says, see that no one repays anyone evil for evil, but always seek to do good to one another and to everyone. He then goes on to say, rejoice always, pray without ceasing, give thanks in all circumstances, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. The words that kept coming to mind were pray without ceasing. And then I went and I was reading scripture earlier today, and those words were so relevant. When someone is doing something evil to you, we don't repay evil with evil. We rejoice always, we pray without ceasing, and we give thanks in all circumstances, because that is the will of God for us in Jesus Christ. And so, if I said nothing else, I tell you, pray without ceasing, rejoice always, and give thanks in all circumstances. And I know, I get that's not easy. And so here's what I would say, Anne. Remember that Jesus Christ said some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. This was his response when he came down from Mount Tabor and some of the disciples couldn't cast out a demon. And they said, well, why couldn't we? And he said, well, one, because of lack of faith, but two, because some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. So my challenge to you is start fasting for your husband. This is demonic activity. Do not let the enemy have a place in your home. And while you can't control your husband's behavior and what he's exposing himself to, you can pray and fight for him in that way. Second, I compliment and commend your faith. And I'll just say, you've done nothing wrong, because I know women tend to blame themselves. Well, maybe he wouldn't have cheated. Maybe he wouldn't have done that. Okay, maybe there are things that you've done that are mistakes, but that will never justify your husband looking at pornography or wanting an open marriage. It never does. Yes, we are human beings. We make mistakes. Do not blame yourself for this. Again, my compliments. You're doing all the right things. You tried to get to a Catholic therapist. You tried to get him to retrovi. He's not willing to do so. I'll just throw out there, if he's willing to talk to someone and it's free advice, check out Jim O'Day at Integrity Restored. I know that he will talk to you. Tell him I sent you. And he's not a therapist, but he gets these issues very well. And this is a lot of the work he's doing. And I would hazard a guess that there's some pornography going on behind part of your husband's reason. And so for wanting an open marriage. So again, I recommend Integrity Restored. I'm including a link. I know Patrick's going to put that in the episode notes and on social media. Another thing is, I really want to talk to you for just a moment. You should not feel bad if the circumstances require it to protect yourself by engaging in marital abstinence. If your husband is being sexually active with other people at this time as he's trying to pursue an open marriage and as you're trying to heal the marriage. Because there's legitimacy in you physically protecting yourself through marital abstinence from sexually transmitted diseases. This is a health concern, and it's something that you can very clearly state to your husband. And we're going to get into some of the practical elements of talking to your husband in just a moment, because I get it. He's objecting to church. He's objecting to government. And so we'll touch on that. But I just want you to know the legitimacy of, for serious, and that would be a serious medical reason to protect yourself if your spouse is engaging with other people and you don't know their medical history, to abstain for a season while you're working to make sure that your marriage is being protected and your body's protected as well. Fifth, I really encourage you to talk to your husband as you are able, and I know you are, but just some thoughts, you know, if he's objecting to the church and the government, talk to him where he's at if and when you do discuss this. And use the Socratic method. That's where you ask him questions. Be careful that they're not too pointed, but do ask him questions. Ask him, maybe it even starts with, okay, if he's not committed to this from the perspective of faith, if he's not committed to this from the perspective of the government that you're legally wed, well, would he be willing to give his fidelity for the sake of you? And if you have children, for the sake of your children? If so, why? And if not, why not? Ask, is he concerned about the medical risk to himself and yourself by engaging in what could leave you both vulnerable to STDs and STIs? Does he know about gonorrhea, chlamydia, syphilis, HPV? We could go through all of these, and not just how they impact the man, but how they impact the woman, you, because women suffer more from sexually transmitted diseases, and I hope you know that. A man can be a carrier and never have a single symptom. Women, it's not the same. And we'll post a link to an episode with Pam Stenzel, who speaks much of sexually transmitted diseases, if you need a little bit of information on that. It'll be in the episode notes. Does he also know that he exposes you to anyone that he sleeps with and any past partner they've had and anyone, anything that they have? I want to challenge you to stay close during this time to the sacraments. It'll spiritually protect you, and it will strengthen and fortify you. Offer masses for him. When you go to mass, go to daily mass. Commission masses for him. Go to the church and have that mass celebrated for him. Also, I'm posting a link in the episode notes and on social media to deliverance prayers for the laity. I do recommend these prayers, along with knowing you have an army of prayer warriors behind you right now. For the sake of anonymity, I'm calling you in, and I'm praying for you, and I'm asking everyone to pray with me for you as well. You might consider consecrating yourself to you and your marriage to Saint Joseph. He or to Our Lady, they will take care of this. And as for the embarrassment of not confiding in others, I get it. There's a legitimacy of keeping private and safe what's going on. But also, if you need to talk to someone, and if you know someone will have sound guidance and not steer you in the wrong direction, but continue to uphold the faith that you have, prayerfully discern. Ask God to send you, or for you to be confident in speaking to someone. And finding the right person. Ask God to reveal that person to you. Maybe you need to reach out to a religious order and reach out to a nun, or confide in a priest in spiritual direction. You can always reach out. I'm praying for you. And I will throw this resource out there as well. As you're working to heal your marriage, this is a betrayal trauma. And we have a wonderful apostle in the Catholic Church called Bloom for Catholic Women. It's called bloomforcatholicwomen.com. We're posting a link on social media. And we're praying for you. I'm with you in prayer. I'll be right back here on Trending, diving into emergency rooms spiking here in the U.S., along with how to celebrate Holy Week. Join Father Rocky this September for a pilgrimage to Poland and Prague. You'll visit the lands of St. John Paul the Great, St. Faustina, Our Lady of Częstochowa, and the Infant Child of Prague. Seats are limited. Information at relevantradio.com/Poland. That's relevantradio.com/Poland.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
I'm following the briefings to the Supreme Court of the United States from Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine, as in the coming days, this month, the Supreme Court will hear arguments on the chemical abortion case. Now, there's a lot of data, and I'm going to post a link in the episode notes as well as on social media. You can catch the notes at relevantradio.com/trending, wherever you catch your podcast. But also be sure to grab the Relevant Radio app, where you can listen on demand, pause, play, send a link of the show to a friend or a family member. So the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine is showing the major spike in emergency room visits for the chemical abortion pill, also known as the combination of mifepristone and misoprostol. These two chemical abortion pills together, one killing the baby, one leading to the delivery, are so detrimental for women. And the Supreme Court case, we pray, and I hope if you do nothing else, you will pray for our Supreme Court justices, for those who are arguing the case, that the truth reigns and women are protected along with babies. Number one, babies are being killed. But number two, this is not medicine. And these pills have horrific side effects for women. We're seeing data even coming from the FDA itself, even on the chemical abortion pills report for the label. The 2023 report is showing a huge spike in related emergency room visits in the tens of thousands. Not to mention that there's a cosmic break in the data where we're seeing numbers between 11,000 and 39,000 women in 1 year who needed additional medical surgery because the chemical abortion process was not complete. That can leave women susceptible to infection, sepsis, autoimmune disorders, which, by the way, autoimmune disorders and infections are very common among women who are going through with RU46 chemical abortion, the mifepristone and misoprostol. Now, some of what's also been seen is that the FDA itself and their own data report that 1 in 25 women will require emergency care to completely finish addressing what's happening with the medical treatment. In other words, the abortion. That they may even need medical care after the abortion as well. That's from the FDA. 1 in 25 women. How is that acceptable in any place? Not to mention Mifepristone and misoprostol together have a black box warning. The Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine wrote that because the drug can cause serious and sometimes fatal infections and bleeding, it also directs women to emergency rooms if one of just the many complications arise. So in other words, they say if any complication arises, you need to go to the emergency room immediately. I've worked firsthand with women who've been through abortions, and specifically chemical abortions. It's the most common type of abortion today. It makes up about 3 in 5 abortions at least. And women will not go to the emergency room of their own free will. They are refusing to go because they are so embarrassed because they just had an abortion. They know no matter what the world tries to tell them, they just participate in ending the life of their baby. And so they think they deserve this physical pain. They think they deserve these physical complications. They think they deserve to die. And so these women refuse to go and receive the medical care they desperately need. And what's sad is that this is built into what is viewed as part of the process for RU486 chemical abortion. The FDA data and the data coming from mifepristone or misoprostol itself shows that ER visits are a norm, and if there are any complications, that you need to go. I don't know a single woman who hasn't had a complication when she's done the chemical abortion pill process. How many deaths need to occur? And by the way, we do not require that abortion is linked to that death certificate or cause of death in any way. And so we do not have adequate data on the number of women who are dying as a result, or who are even in the emergency room as a result of chemical abortion. So I'm asking you to pray. Pray for our Supreme Court justices. Pray that we have the courage to talk about chemical abortion when this is the most common type of abortion being given today. Women aren't even being told to do it properly. They're being told just to even take the second set of pills because the abortion industry expects the first set of pills, mifepristone, misoprostol, for just one of them to be made available, not both, after the Supreme Court case. So we need to pray for our Supreme Court justices, for those fighting the case, especially those from the Alliance for Hippocratic Medicine. And we need to start having those conversations that are difficult, especially with young women, no matter the outcome, because young women are on the front line. Their friends are the ones having these abortions, or they themselves. And they need to know the truth that this is not medicine, and this is not how we handle the inconveniences and challenges that life brings us. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Coming up this week is Holy Week. I love Holy Week. We have the Triduum of Holy Thursday, Good Friday, the Easter Vigil, all of it ushering us through and into the great celebration of Easter that we've long been awaiting during this Lenten season. Father Rocky will be preaching a mission here during Trending's Hour next week, so this is my encouragement to you. I truly hope that you'll take time set aside to go to Mass on Holy Thursday, to veneration of the cross on Friday, on Good Friday, and to go to Stations of the Cross. To take time on Holy Saturday for silence and prayer. If you can, if you've never been, go to an Easter Vigil. It's quite wonderful. Although a little bit longer of a Mass, it's worth it. And celebrate on Sunday. Celebrate the good news of our Lord. Let it be a prayerful and joyful celebration for you. But I hope that you enter into Christ's passion this week, and that you remain with him through it, so that you can remain with him in the celebration. I'm praying for you. I hope you'll pray for me as well. And we'll post links on social media as well. One of my favorite traditions, we love to take up some of the foods that used to be traditionally had during the Seder meal. That's a Passover meal. It's a great big meal we have on Thursday night after Mass. And then we enter into a long fast through the weekend. Used to be some of the old customs that we not only fast on Good Friday, but also through Saturday after you go to Mass on Easter, the Easter Vigil. So I pray for you as you finish your Lenten sacrifices and enter into Christ's passion this week. And I'll talk to you in the Easter season. God bless you. Please pray for me. I'm praying for you.